Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 345 of the Roguecast, recorded August 25th, 2021. You pumped and slept will kill us all.
We are back in the recording studio, deep underneath
The fabled walls of Castle Grayskull.
Yes, yes.
That's actually quasi-thematic, since we're going to talk about a He-Man thing. That's actually not the He-Man thing that most people have been talking about.
We're going to talk about a different He-Man thing.
A different He-Man thing.
Because there's multiple He-Mans.
Somehow they're simultaneously making multiple different He-Man shows.
More like He-Man in the multiverse.
Maybe we should just talk about it now.
No.
You have to do your little store news.
Yes, okay. We do have a pre-release coming up for Innistrad Midnight Hunt. It's werewolf-themed.
That's pretty cool.
I'm sure Anna will be excited to play as a werewolf.
Just to double check, Innistrad is a generic kind of horror setting, but this is going to be zero in on the werewolf
stuff. So Innistrad is a return to a world. It's like their Ravenloft, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing two sets sort of back-to-back. The first one, werewolf-themed. The second one, vampire-themed.
I see. So this is a complete ripoff of the movie Underworld.
Presumably, I assume there's a third that they haven't announced yet, a secret one, that is Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Creatures from Black Lagoons, yes. I hope there will be a fourth set that's Frankenstein's.
You know what this conversation has told me? Randy's become a huge magic nerd.
That is true. I have become a huge magic
nerd. He's got paper magic now.
I do. I have paper magic.
I liked old Randy, who wasn't a nerd.
he was just a dullard.
There was never a Randy that was not... I've always been a nerd and a dullard.
Sorry.
Moving on from store news.
Are we done trashing Randy?
Yeah.
All right.
No, probably not. Not if experience has told me anything. Bunch of news this week. We got Anthony Mackie officially closing the deal to star in Captain America 4.
Which I was surprised by because
I thought that deal was closed.
Yeah, I thought that was done after Captain America Winter Soldier. Yeah. Sure. Does this mean that Sebastian Stan hasn't been greenlit for whatever?
Not. Yeah, he was like... He's like, well, we might not do the Winter Soldier again. We'll see.
What are you talking about? What does this have to do with Sebastian Stan?
Sebastian Stan also has a you know, record, a deal to make, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, he'll...
I think we're just commenting on the fact that
we thought this deal was locked.
Like, yeah, already.
It's weird to get an announcement of a thing. It's kind of like them announcing, hey, we're making a third Spider-Man movie. I'm like, yeah, we know there's a trailer.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like the debate of like who should wear the shield.
No. It was literally just that they announced it without, I mean, yeah.
It seems weird. It seems like we thought that news was done.
Yeah.
It was not. News that was more unexpected and welcome to me was that they are working on a Black Canary movie.
Yeah.
With,
Journey Smollett?
From the Birds of Prey movie.
From the Birds of Prey.
She played Black Canary, the songstress
and
butt kicker in the movie.
She was also a notable character in Lovecraft Country.
Yes, she was.
Which is worth mentioning because this movie is going to be written by Lovecraft Country showrunner Misha Green.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome.
And this is a straight-up HBO Max movie.
The same way that
the Batgirl one is.
Explicitly, essentially a sequel to Birds of Prey. In other words... Then we make no bones that this is that Black Canary.
Yeah, I mean, I assume
it'd be weird. Like DC is so weird; you never know when their movies are going to connect.
I think they're going to slowly just do a DCAU extended universe that ties everything in together, and they're just going to just tie everything.
Well,
whether it be weird David Ayer's Suicide Squad.
Good luck tying together like Titans and like some. There's some weird shit.
I don't know what show you're talking about. Titans sucks.
No, Nick, it's glorious trash.
It is trash.
I'm excited about this. I actually assumed, because the word was that Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey did not do very well, that we would not be seeing anymore. But apparently it did well enough for them to do a Black Canary movie.
Right. Maybe somebody believes in it.
Well, I hope that means that Margot Robbie comes back in some fashion in it.
All I want, honestly, I want more Huntress.
Yeah. Elizabeth Winstead.
Love her.
Is she off doing movies and stuff?
Yeah.
Like, or is she a TV person?
She's doing a movie.
Okay. Yeah. I do think, like, if they could do one of those things where, yes, it could be Black Canary's story, because she worked for the Black Mask, right?
Yeah, she did.
But Black Mask is gone now.
That's
and true. So that opens all sorts of possibilities in her life. But yeah, if like Margot Robbie could kind of guest star as a little bit of a handoff from Harley Quinn early on, or check in on her mid-movie, show up and cause some mayhem and then exit.
Kind of like a 70s show. And our good buddy Harley Quinn is here to help us along the way.
Yes.
She just shows up in her, just pulls up in her car and she's like, hey there, how's it going?
She should show up with egg sandwiches.
Yes, that would be great.
But yeah, I like that too. I think I'd like to see a follow-up in the... Now here's a question. Will it be as an anarchic as Birds of Prey, which was from Harley Quinn's perspective, and
probably
therefore
not.
Much
probably
crazier?
Not.
It won't. Lovecraft Country was definitely a little more grounded, and I suspect it'll be in that vein.
If you were to watch only the parts that had kind of focus on Black Canary, she was in some darker stuff because she was what Black Mask girlfriend as well.
No.
Was she not?
She was her singer slash driver.
Was there an implication that he had an interest? I know he was also...
He had an interest. She had no interest.
Right. He was probably very bi in this one, but I think he had an interest in her. But she was also there. Wasn't he there when he, like creeped out and, like, made that one girl dance on the tables or whatever?
Yes.
She was there for that and stuff. Yeah. Like,
I think that's why she finally called the cops.
Some darker stuff. And that was still Gotham, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, to see Black Canary finally get some screen
time. Yeah, I'm excited about it. Also, they have announced that Dominique Thorne's Ironheart will make her debut in Black Panther 2, Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Which ties into my theory has long been that center at the end of Wakanda, I assume that is where Ironheart will come out.
You said at the end of Wakanda, you mean at the end of Black
Panther. Out of Black Panther, yes.
Yes. I knew what you were talking about. Yes, I think that
Ironheart would be like a talented prodigy from that institute.
From South Central LA, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that basically Shuri will be her mentor instead of Iron Man.
I think that's awesome.
I think that, because Shuri was going to be the one running that place, so I assume that we'll see some of that. We'll see. I imagine that the story changed quite a lot.
Well, honestly, the sort of, instead of being a... Like, if Black Panther was mentoring her, you get a slightly, like, older brother or younger sister or father-daughter vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Here it's going to be like a Black Girl Magic kind of thing, I think, if the two of them working together.
I agree.
And I think that could be pretty dope, too.
I think it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to it. Brian Michael Bendis has announced a multi-year partnership at Dark Horse. He's taken all his creator-owned stuff from DC over to there. He's got a new book coming out called... what's it called? Joy Operations with artist Stephen Byrne, who is the guy who did the Justice League Power Ranger stuff.
You know, he's had his creator owned stuff at Image, Marvel, DC, and now Dark Horse. Wherever he goes, they sort of reprint it in nice formatting, and then he usually does one or two new ones, and then he kind of moves on. I think, would it be fair to say that he's kind of fallen out of all of our favors at this point?
Yes, yes it would. And also, comics favor, because going from Image to DC, to Marvel to DC, that's kind of a lateral move.
Yeah.
Dark Horse is a definite drop-off. Like, from there, his next step is Boom and IDW, and then maybe, I don't know, Antarctic.
Maybe while he's there, he could write a Critical Role comic.
Yes.
What else does Dark
Horse
have?
Yeah, it's sort of like, once you start doing licensed properties, that's when you're, like, when you're the Brian Wood kind of level.
I'll say this, as someone who used to like Bendis' stuff, I would rather see him doing his own stuff. I'm not likely going to read it, but it's not going to bother me like it is the way he's destroying perfectly good DC characters right now.
He has had a time of it. You know what? The one interesting thing is that he's made these big changes with, like, I guess, Legion of Superheroes.
Yep.
With
did that book get officially canceled? Or just disappeared into the ether, right?
I think it just disappeared.
I actually like theoretically him kind of broadening the diversity among them and doing throwing some new ideas in. Sounded like something that maybe he could have pulled off. Turns out he did.
He did not.
But, like, here's the thing. Is like, I don't think that if they relaunched any of those things, if they forgot all about the... What was his super crime syndicate thing?
Man, I forgot about
that one. Gargantuan monstrosity cyclopean... Remember the crossover that had all the intelligence agencies?
Oh, Checkmate.
Oh, yeah. I know what
was it called?
Leviathan.
Leviathan, that was it.
Leviathan.
Like... I think if DC just stopped using any of that tomorrow, I don't think anyone would notice.
No one would notice. He made no impact. I mean, he created Naomi, who was going to get a CW show, and that'll be a notable thing.
Right.
But I think that may be the only impact he had at DC.
Yeah.
He also did age John Kent up, which was a bad thing, but Tom Taylor's making it work.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And at some point, did Superman's identity get outed?
Yes, but I think it went back in the cage immediately. Like,
okay.
I don't know. They don't talk about it.
Yeah, it's another one of those things, like, none of these things seem to be impacting.
Yeah.
So.
I do feel like Bendis' tenure at DC has been utterly forgettable. Like, and he worked on Superman and Batman, Justice League, Legion.
You had Young your Justice. Shot.
Like, he worked on, not like he's not just shunted off to small books. He didn't make an impact.
Tom Taylor, he ain't.
I'm hoping this will open up I'm hoping that he is actually moving off DC, like, that his exclusive has ended, and that maybe someone else will take over Justice League, because I really want to like Justice League, and it's not very good.
When was the last time Justice League was kind of notable?
Grant Morrison.
Was there anything afterwards?
Wade's stuff was okay.
People
at some point liked Snyder's, but it was not...
But they were wrong. They were wrong to like it.
What was the one that had the version, like, kind of updated versions of the Super Friends characters, like Apache Chief and stuff? There was like a rethink of them in the early 2000s. I can't remember who was writing it. Dustin Nguyen or one of those guys was drawing it, and it looked good. But I think it was still a step down from Morrison. I just remember like bits and pieces that I liked.
Was Morrison like 2000?
I think he was late 90s. Wow. It was actually, and then maybe up to early 2000s.
That's a long time to go without having it be an A-list book again.
It's true.
Yeah. I'm just saying, give it to Tom Taylor. He'll know what to do with it.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that I suspect that they may have offered it, and he may have declined waiting. He wants to wait till he feels he's ready to
maybe
do
so.
It. And, yeah. and that I can respect.
Also, I don't want to tax Tom Taylor.
Right.
I don't want to overburden him.
That's great.
And he's already writing several books, and he's about to launch another book, he's got his creator-owned books.
True. It's true.
Now, what's smart about him is that, like, Nightwing is ongoing, and I guess Superman or Kal-El, Son of Superman, is ongoing.
Yep.
But like his Dark Ages thing is a miniseries.
8 issues been working on for 2 years.
Yep.
So.
It's like it's more like Deceased and stuff like that.
But like Deceased, it could be a series of miniseries.
We'll see.
I guess they'll probably be testing the waters. I have a feeling it'll do all right.
I do like how talking about Bendis moved us right over talking about Tom Taylor.
We're trying to give a positive spin off.
Because he's this decade's Bendis, honestly. Yep.
Only his stuff is going to actually hold up.
I mean, Bendis' stuff at work at Marvel holds up. If you go...
I feel like Miles as a character will hold up.
Yeah.
But I think I could go back and reread his Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably go back and reread decent chunks of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's much beyond that that I'd really care about.
I tried going back and read Alias, and I couldn't.
Yeah.
It was really tough.
Yeah, unfortunately. I don't know. I wish him well. I hope that he does.
I think he's a nice person.
Dark Horse, I just don't like his writing.
Yeah. Nice guy.
You know who I don't wish well? Deadpool.
Is this a segue?
Nick enjoys tormenting us, and he did enjoy sending a bit of news. Deadpool 3, according to Kevin Feige, was asked about by some random Deadpool fans, monsters all, whether or not Deadpool... And he said that basically Deadpool 3, they have a release window in mind, and Ryan Reynolds is working on the script with him. Now, Nick, he may just be appeasing you Deadpool fans. He may be like, you don't know what to do with Deadpool. He's the dumbest character ever. But I can't say that out loud.
Are you kidding me?
Or they'll send me a bunch of chimichangas in the mail until
this is like an instant like moneymaker for Disney.
No, Deadpool's dead. It's
Kevin Feige is all about he's all about what do you call it? Credibility and truthfulness to the characters. He actually has found a way to make that work and sell. And so of course he hates Deadpool.
Here's my pitch. I believe they should go ahead and make a Deadpool versus Venom movie. It should be out of continuity, and that's fine. Everybody, all the people who like those two characters can go see a movie and be happy.
You're saying get it all done, and they both die in the movie, Randy?
They're not in continuity, is all I'm saying. They're somewhere in the multiverse.
So do you not think it's possible that Kevin Feige will come up with a good way of bringing Deadpool into the Marvel Universe?
No.
The essential nature
Kevin
of
Feige,
Deadpool,
who has not done anything wrong to this point, that has given you utter joy in your life.
I don't believe Deadpool.
The essential nature of Deadpool is fourth wall breaking, superhero humiliating, ultra violence, and stuff like that. Like, it's all stuff that's kind of incompatible with the Marvel Universe as is.
It undercuts the sincerity of what makes the MCU work. I really don't want to see it.
Yeah, they'll do like I Love You 3000, and the audience will be crying, and then Deadpool will like lean into the camera and make the little heart symbol with his fingers, and it'll be like, ah.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Well, I don't think that's what's going to be. Yeah, there's going to be some fourth wall breaking, and But I do think there's going to be a way that it's not, like, completely destroying the MCU, because I don't think
that works.
They will
probably find a way that's not completely destroying the MCU. He will probably just guest and a little bit in them.
I don't want it. I don't want him. I don't want him in the MCU.
Maybe he could liven up the Eternals.
I think ultimately...
I like that there will be different facets of the MCU.
There are plenty of different facets already. We don't need a poo-poo head.
I have laughed at many things. Thor Ragnarok, Ant-Man, and I'm ready to enjoy it and have the laughter.
What if Deadpool is directed by Taika Waititi?
Don't want to see it.
In retrospect, I wish I'd never admitted to liking Deadpool 1 and 2. I feel like I gave you a crack in the facade, and it's not... I regret enjoying them.
I'm just saying, when they released the trailer for this... I bet you'll like it.
I bet I won't. I bet I'll like it as much as I like that first Eternals trailer.
We have Eternals news in it.
We do. We're coming up there. Okay. Stuff. Yeah.
I love the fact that you guys are hoping like the Eternals sucks.
No, we're just expecting it.
I can't see a way out of this one. Yeah. I think with Rocket Raccoon, I could see from the first trailer, I could see might pull this off.
Yeah.
Man, Eternals is going to be a rough one.
It's going to be a rough one. I mean, they already tried to do Inhumans on TV, and the problem was Inhumans are boring. Yeah. So, Eternals
are
also boring.
If anyone is going to pull it off, it's Marvel.
This is true. It's like, if anyone is going to make it work, but...
But I have yet to see the full sign of it.
I worry that they have gotten too big for their britches. They're like, we can do anything. Even make Eternals interesting.
Even make Namor interesting.
Even Neil Gaiman was unable to make the Eternals interesting.
Yeah.
Do we want to go ahead and talk about the trailer since we're just talking about it?
Let's get to the
Randy has a list and a schedule and he cannot deviate from it or his brain will break.
We'll get to all the trailers. They released the images for Cowboy Bebop on Netflix.
Yeah.
They look great.
They do.
The live action Cowboy Bebop.
John Cho is Spike.
Looks amazing. Their Jet is good. Their Faye is good.
Yeah.
I've only watched a handful of the anime, but this made me want to go and watch the rest of the anime.
Oh, the anime is amazing. You should watch it.
This looks super fun.
Dave should watch it. He would like it.
We know, is this an straight-up adaptation of the same story, or are they doing some side story?
We don't know, I don't think, actually.
I mean, weirdly, Cowboy Bebop had a definitive ending.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a...
Right, I'm aware of that. Maybe this is going to be Cowboy Bebop and Rocksteady?
I mean...
Cowboy Bebop and Indian Rocksteady.
All I want to know is Ed better be there and Ayn better be there.
Ayn is in one of the shots.
Oh, is he? I missed that.
She's on a leash.
Oh, okay.
That Faye is holding.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I'm going to assume that's the corgi.
That's the corgi.
And not some weird BDSM character.
Right. You don't know.
I'm not saying BDSM's even weird.
In the future, all corgis are BDSM corgis.
What an imaginative future they've created. Sounds like an issue of Heavy Metal.
But here's a big question, though. Do you deviate from the soundtrack that Cowboy Bebop started?
You have to.
Yeah, you gotta update.
But that was so iconic to that show. Well,
they need to get somebody to redo the theme music, basically, and update.
Right, I know the theme music. I think you keep it and reorchestrate it. And then maybe even get the original guy to do a new soundtrack to it, or someone else who's working in that style. Here's the thing is, like, I know it's kind of was all blues and jazz, right?
Yeah.
Did it have any modern stuff in it?
Because
there was,
so.
Like, that opening soundtrack, wasn't it kind of like a little electronica?
A little bit, but it's...
Was it like... Right? Isn't there kind of like a little...
Just like that.
Something like that as a little intro, right? You could throw it, like, I wonder if you could weave in a little hip-hop now?
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
A little lo-fi hip-hop?
We'll see. I don't know, I think... I do think new music could be a good thing as long as it's true to the nature of the show. We'll see.
No, there has been no live action anime that has been great.
How about some oompa music? What do you think?
All trap hop.
I thought you were saying all done by Oompa Loompas.
Also consider the timeless power of dubstep.
Netflix also announced they've cast Brandon Routh as Planeswalker Gideon in Magic the Gathering. I forgot they were doing this.
I did too.
Speaking of me being a magic nerd.
Yeah.
There's a TV show based on magic.
Yep.
It's going to be about a singular Planeswalker.
Or do we know?
Yeah, I would imagine it's multiple.
And just as a reminder to people like me who don't know anything, they're like the Planeswalkers are like the superheroes of the magic world. The badass.
They can cross dimensions and they have lots of magic.
And they're super wizardy.
Yeah, they're super wizardy. Well, they're like Doctor Strange.
They seem like sexy wizards.
They are sexy wizards. Yeah. Some of them are mean wizards. Some of them are cool wizards. Some of them are dragons.
Okay, that's all pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a very expensive show to make.
Some of them are
like
pandas. I don't actually know if that's true.
Probably.
There's a bear druid, though, so that's cool.
Yep.
I'm sure someone from Strixhaven is a panda.
He's probably, yeah.
It sounds expensive.
It does sound expensive.
More than The Witcher, which at least at times you can just be walking around in a forest in The Witcher.
But
in Magic, aren't you always going to, like, some new realm and everybody is, like, glowing?
The realms are probably the same, like, foresty.
Yeah, you can have a lot of people dressed up in jewelry and they look like they're...
Yeah, I guess
also, Dave, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Netflix is a lot of money.
I mean, I guess that's true. Even though they cancel everything. I hear this magic thing is already canceled.
Yep.
It's a big success, but also canceled.
Well,
that's what HBO Max does to Lovecraft Country.
That's true.
Can Brandon Routh the lead?
I think he must be.
Can he anchor a show?
I like him, but can he anchor a show? Legends of the East Universe.
I think he does better with an ensemble.
Yeah.
So.
And surely there will be other, like an ensemble of some sorts around him.
Yeah, I would imagine he is not the lead.
Do Planeswalkers have retinues? Do they have...
They seem like, I mean, from what little I know...
And from the comic, they did do some comics.
It seems like the Planeswalkers, like, interact with each other the way superheroes and supervillains do. So.
Yeah, right. But they are kind of singularly powerful and don't always walk around with a crew.
Right.
But Flash is a character that doesn't normally have the crew, and then for the TV show, they gave him a support team, and it worked pretty well.
Maybe they'll just make Cisco the magic Cisco.
I don't think they'll do a Magic the Gathering and just focus on Gideon. I think they'll do a whole bunch of characters.
I mean, how do you not do Chandra, who's like their sexy fire mage? I'm sure they'll do her.
Yeah. And theoretically, they could, as Planeswalkers, they could end up in any of the worlds that we know of. Like, we just talked about Scaryland.
Yep. Innistrad. Scaryland is the alternate name they use for it. Yeah.
But Strixhaven, their kind of Harry Potter magic school world.
Kaldheim.
Vikings.
Sexy Vikings.
Badass world. Sexy Vikings.
Sexy Vikings.
You have to put sexy in front of all of their worlds.
Sexy Harry Potter school.
Sexy Harry Potter school. That's a bad nope. Don't like it.
Listen,
like
there's
it.
Like acres and acres of fan fiction, I'm sure,
that's
disagrees with
true.
You. Uncomfortable as that might
they've
be.
They've got sexy Egypt. They've got sexy city-state. They've got sexy Greece. There's all kinds of sexy worlds.
Sexy Theros.
Sexy Theros. That's the Greece.
I know.
Sexy
that
mythic odysseys of Theros.
I think the idea of all the different worlds that they could head to, and I know that there's lots of magic novels and stuff like that, but probably have a lot of cool lore in them. It seems like it could be fun if Brandon Routh doesn't tank it.
Yeah.
I like Brandon Routh.
I do too, but I'm not sure he can anchor a movie. I mean, he did try to anchor a Superman movie. It didn't go great.
I don't think he's going to anchor. I think this is just the first casting announcement.
Maybe so.
Mayhap Wanderer.
Maybe Gal Gadot is going to play Chandra.
Maybe.
He'd be down for it.
Sure, why not? Netflix has so much money, in fact, that they made two He-Man shows. One good one and one dumb one for kids.
Do we understand? I don't think we should call it dumb. It doesn't look stupid. It just is not for us.
It looked pretty stupid. It was kind of boingy young humor.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's for kids. It's not for us.
So these look like teenage characters.
Yeah.
And it looks like they are kind of... the Masters of the Universe sort of took on a different meaning and kind of had some different explanations in the Kevin Smith revamped version.
Yeah.
This CG one seems like their kids will become the new era of the Masters of the Universe.
Yep.
Their own rethink of it.
And they'll all have
different focus powers.
And, like, high-tech CGI gear.
And it looks like Power Rangers and kind of thing.
A little bit,
but there's a lot of that kind of humor where somebody's like, you did not just smack that beast man in the face, did you?
Yeah.
And it has snarky kids humor.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of the stuff that I've liked over the last few years that are in the adventure cartoon world, stuff like from the Avatar people, so Last Airbender, Korra, Voltron, Dragon Prince, does have some like snarky humor here and there, but man, it's played to the hilt on this. And
you can make stuff for kids that isn't dumbed down. This does not look like that.
It looks a little dumbed down.
This looks like a movie for like Paw Patrol loving child.
Yeah, this is set right alongside the Fast and the Furious Spy Racers cartoon.
Not Camp Cretaceous.
Camp Cretaceous.
No, Camp Cretaceous is good.
People are watching.
Randy don't know shit about Camp Cretaceous.
I've never watched a minute of it.
I'm going to send some dinosaurs your way to kill you.
I think I have this feeling that unless kids love this, and kids don't have the nostalgia for the property,
no,
I don't think.
No.
And I think their dads who already didn't like the other one won't find snarky kid He-Man more palatable in particular.
And also,
although maybe they will. Maybe they'll just be like, at least it's a guy.
There's still girls in this one. Masked Men at Arms is a girl.
That's true. That's true.
That's going to just set them all on fire.
That's true.
Which is a good idea.
What is, I kind of hope will happen, sorry, people's jobs, is that this will disappear after a season or two, and we can just focus on the very shockingly, surprisingly good Kevin Smith one.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be successful. It's fine. Netflix can make stuff that's not for me. Whatever.
Yeah, they
it
can make,
needs to go.
They can make two He-Man shows.
All right. Let's talk Foundation trailer.
Okay. Okay.
So this was
for a property I know nothing about.
Right.
This is an Isaac Asimov, like 60s one of his big
sci-fi,
things.
Yep. You know, series of novels. And I found out later that I think, like another like epoch-spanning one, Dune, that people, I think, especially with like after World War II and with Vietnam heating up and stuff like that, became very aware. We're starting to become aware of like. That maybe America's role in the world was more fragile than they thought it was.
Okay.
That the old thing truism that we're just we're the kings of the world now was looking a little bit shaky. And what I understand is that the Foundation take on that kind of thing was explicitly based on the fall of the Roman Empire books.
Yeah.
And imagined a galactic civilization that would also undergo a decline. According to my brother, who's read them, I have not read them. The basic premise is that there's the decline is going to happen. There's the world that there's all the hundreds of galactic civilizations will fall into chaos, and it could last. It's going to last thousands of years and be like a new Dark Ages.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy who's trying to create a knowledge foundation, sort of a world, I think, or whatever, proposes that by doing this and preserving all their information in a singular place. That they can make it so that this dark era only lasts 100 years or 200 years or whatever,
okay.
And that the galaxy can essentially be saved, but it spans hundreds, if not thousands, of years, which is a very tricky thing for a show to do.
That is a tricky thing, and also, I don't know. We watched this; it's a very pretty trailer. Jared Harris seems to be one of the central characters, and he's great. You would know him from Mad Men and from playing Moriarty in the Sherlock Holmes movie.
But he's literally been in everything.
He's been in a ton of stuff. He was in Man from U.N.C.L.E. He's really good. He looks good as sort of the guy who's trying to save everything. I don't recognize anyone else in the trailer. I didn't recognize anybody off the top of my head.
Lee Pace.
Only Pace, right. Who seems to be some guy. it's very pretty looking. It looks very expensive. But it also, I think Dave, you and I both got a whiff of this could be boring.
Right. It is, the fact that it spans these eras without, I believe the books did not have much in the way of central characters, but that maybe that the Emperor gets cloned, and that he will span different eras.
Mm.
But that's skeevy president or whatever. I'm not just assuming he's skeevy. I don't know. Gets to be reborn and be the main character. I'm like, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think they may have some other ways that these characters may still interact in different eras, even if they don't live through all of them. I don't know.
It could be holograms. Who knows?
Holograms, yeah, AI. Who knows what's going on? But I think I'll probably need to hear that it's, people are saying it's pretty good before I dive into it.
Yep. I'm interested in it. I would say I'm about as interested as I am in Prime's Middle-Earth show, which is to say I expect it to disappoint me, but it might be good.
Randy, what would you, say your overall interest is? Because you watched a little bit of the trilogy of Lord of the Rings movies lately.
Yep.
What's your overall Lord of the Rings interest?
What is, are we on a 10-point scale? It's a 5.
No, it's higher than a 5.
No. I don't love Middle-Earth. I don't have a huge
fondness
for it.
Don't you, at least impress that, enjoy the scenes enough to give it a 6 or a 7?
No.
Haven't you posted that meme about living in difficult times many a time?
Yes,
clearly,
okay.
It spoke to you on
there's
some level.
There's one good line. Okay,
right.
Fine. if you were to give me a choice between, say, having a Forgotten Realms movie and a Middle Earth movie, I would take Forgotten Realms in a heartbeat.
What if I were to say you could watch Return of the King, or
the Dungeons and Dragons movie with Thor?
What is it? The third Star Wars prequel.
I would take the Star Wars prequel.
All right. Well, this is what I designed the question to test. Randy is a freak.
No, I am not a freak. I am a nerd and a dullard.
No, we can add freak to it. That's fine.
I'm a nerd, a dullard, and a freak. I own a mansion and a yacht.
We'll call this a dullard category, I think. Yeah. All right. I was just curious. This is like, I'll occasionally pose these questions to Nick, too. I know that there's some bad movies he likes, and I like to...
A lot of bad movies Nick likes.
I like to track them and say, is it worse than Ballistic X versus Sever or not?
Dave, you also like to know whether we'd rather fight four kobolds or a stone golem.
That's true. I'd say that I would put that to the audience... by the way, not fight. It's merely a get past.
Get past them, yes. Not fight.
But it's not posted on the stores page, but maybe we will migrate this to the stores page so that people can throw in their wives' opinions.
Yes, possibly so.
But we have diverted. What were we talking about?
We were talking about Foundation. And that's, oh my gosh. Maybe that's where the thread drift
went. It's exciting that we had to go and talk about D&D.
Yes.
And Lord of the Rings and a bunch of other stuff.
We're getting a D&D movie. We're getting the... Lord of the Rings thing on Prime. We're getting Wheel of Time on... That's Prime as well.
Of those, only the Lord of the Rings show is going to be good.
No, the Wheel of Time thing could be... Nope. Okay.
Dave, I have bad news for you about all three of those things.
I'm actually open to the possibility that Lord of the Rings
thing
will be weak.
I don't think the Lord of the Rings thing was going to fail. I think they're spending too much money.
I actually think it's a little bit like that, sort of like Disney putting money behind Star Wars projects like the Mandalorian. I think it's too big to fail to some degree. But if it does,
every Tolkienite, no.
And it's in a weird way. It won't bother me. I'm sort of excited to see it, but I'm not like such a devoted fan that I'm can't wait for it to come out. If I don't get a Lord of the Rings TV show, no biggie.
We all know you're horny for orcs.
I'm horny for elves, sir.
Specifically the Eladrin.
Let's talk about the Eternals. Speaking of potentially boring things.
Yep.
The first trailer was a huge disappointment.
To you.
To me and a lot of people.
Well...
To two of the three people in this room.
It's true.
Well, let's just say this.
It could be a disappointment to Dave, because Dave had no expectations.
We're gonna shortly talk about the new Spider-Man trailer.
Yes.
And I think most of the reactions I was seeing from friends yesterday when it was first hitting was just all, like, people bouncing off the walls.
Yep.
And starting to spoil stuff and, like, freaking out.
Yep.
I don't think I saw even a single person do that for the Eternals teasers or trailers.
Most of what I saw were people saying, well, that's a better trailer.
Yeah. Or I hope they can pull this off.
It is a better trailer. They give a better sense of what the story is.
Yeah.
They also they answer the question that everybody asked, was like, where were you guys when Thanos snapped half the universe? And they're like, we were told not to interfere unless it involves deviance.
By the way, that sounds weirder and weirder as a concept. That there's these, innately evil subhuman races or whatever. I guess they look like kind of animal dragon monsters and stuff. Yeah. I have a feeling there's going to be a little more nuance to how they present it, maybe.
I think so, too. They show one of them, the leader of them, like, talking to Athena, Angelina Jolie's Athena. And I got the sense that maybe, there's going to be a... maybe they'll do what they did with Skrulls and shade that.
Yeah, it'd be hard to imagine that they will just be orc evil.
I feel like ultimately the Celestials are going to come as the big bad.
Now, do you guys know the deal with Celestials? And Nick, you've read the X-Factor, so you know... The whole deal with these Celestials is that they are like the host that comes down and judges humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they find them wanting, they like basically wipe everything out and start over again.
That's evil.
Yeah, that's bad.
Shown to do in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm sure they're presented somewhat like... Galactus at times where they're so above it all they don't even consider it or whatever. By the way, Celestials, for people who haven't seen, are like these, they're like Galactus size, 100
big,
foot
giant
tall
space gods.
They have the weird Kirby armor, and there's a brief glimpse of one in this, and I think the visualization was very cool looking.
Yep. Well, it seems to indicate, just looking at this, that basically that when Thanos did the snap and then they brought everybody back, it created some kind of cosmic energy that drew the attention of the Celestials, and now the Eternals, who are not supposed to interfere with anything, have 7 days to save the world from blank.
Well, is it just from Celestial wrath?
I think it's the return of the Celestials. I think they got to do something to prove that Earth is worthy or something.
That's interesting because it's a way of doing Galactus without doing Galactus.
Mm-hmm.
Galactus-sized things are coming to destroy the world just like Galactus does, and they have to make a stand and stop him. Maybe the Watcher will help like he did with Galactus.
Maybe he will. But I think they still haven't shown us much. This is the final trailer. They said final trailer.
Yeah.
I think they're deliberately not showing us much. Now, whether or not the movie is terrible and that's what they're trying to hide, or they just don't want us to get ahead of ourselves. They're like, well, it's Marvel. You're going to go see it.
I don't think it's bad.
I think it'd be boring.
But then, Nick, would you say at least, though, that like, it doesn't have, like, exactly the highest of highs in the trailer?
I liked seeing the human drama. I like seeing kind of these gods wrestle with the fact that they're not supposed to kind of do sort of watcher style. They have to watch. They can't interact.
I feel like it wasn't framed that well on the thing. Like, even I am not, like, real certain after watching it, it's still what the Eternals are.
But they've been around for years and years and millennia. And they've interacted with, like, people in general, but... And I love these actors. I love Brian Tyree Henry. I like Angelina Jolie, Selma Hayek. I think the performances...
All these people have done bad movies, so the cast being good doesn't mean anything.
But Marvel has not made a bad movie.
They did make Iron Man 3.
Which is not a great movie.
Thor the Dark
World. It's not even a good movie, but it's not a bad movie.
No, if this is about the level of Thor the Dark World, that will be okay.
And
it'll
then
be disappointing.
But then I look at Chloe Zhao, who's
right,
directing...
That could be your quote, thank God it was the level of Thor the Dark World.
I'm looking at Chloe Zhao and her ability to direct movies, and it is above and beyond what some of the other directors that have directed...
Who is she?
She did Nomadland
and a few other things.
But hasn't she done boring movies?
I didn't find Nomadland boring. Okay. She does human drama.
See, that's the thing. Like, Marvel...
Well,
I don't know,
this didn't feel like a very human drama story to me from the trailer. There's a lot of people talking loftily and mysteriously. Like, our time has come.
There's definitely going to be a romance between Cersei and... is it Icarus?
I feel like writing godlike characters...
Well, it's Black Knight, but she and...
Icarus.
Yeah, Icarus have been a thing forever, and she has sort of scorned him finally.
You know, I feel like writing gods is a difficult thing. I can't actually imagine anybody making it interesting unless the gods were extremely down to earth, like in the sort of Greek god tradition, drunkards and assholes.
Yeah. I think I just now realized that if Black Knight is in this, they're doing the Black Knight Cersei thing from the Avengers, which is kind of cool. I kind of like that, if he's going to be the mortal that she falls for. I don't know. I
think there's more to this movie that they're showing.
I agree.
Hints of it, though. That Spider-Man trailer showed a few big things in it.
Several big things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It did show a lot. And I think that it will work because people are going to want to see what it suggests.
Yeah.
And I still think, like, we've talked about, what if they use the Eternals to reveal the history of the Marvel Universe and... You know, they're like, they could do a story set in the Old West, and then it has Rawhide Kid in it and other Marvel characters from that era interacting with them, and it's basically a vehicle for all kinds of neat stories throughout Marvel history and Kang stuff and all this.
Shouldn't they have shown that? I'm going to be the odd man out on this table because I am more excited for Eternals than I am Spider-Man.
That's weird.
That is weird.
Because it's an unknown.
I call you dullard and fool.
We don't know what the Eternals is.
And you have that much hope that they're going to get it right?
Because I feel like the people involved know what makes a movie tick. And what...
This director hasn't directed a Marvel movie, though, right?
No.
Okay. Or anything similar.
She's won an Oscar... She directed an Oscar-winning, you know...
That's the thing. I feel like she's...
Well, you and I we all like Shane Black to varying degrees.
But he was the wrong guy for Iron Man 3.
He was the wrong guy for Iron Man 3.
That's what I'm worried about. It's not that I don't think she can make a competent movie. It's that I'm afraid she's not going to make the... Ang Lee made The Hulk. Ang Lee's a very talented filmmaker. It was a terrible film.
I think it's the unknown that I am really interested in, as opposed to Spider-Man, where I'm kind of like, okay, we get what we're getting.
I get that. I guess, for me, I want a certain amount of comfort food from Marvel, and The Eternals seems more like someone's like, here are some lima beans.
I want to like The Eternals. I think the concept is interesting.
I think that's maybe the thing. I don't even want to like them.
Yeah, I don't even care about The Eternals.
They're Kirby creation, and I want to see like these like demigods done well.
I have more interest in Devil Dinosaur, and I don't have much interest in Devil Dinosaur.
Yeah, I was going to make the exact same comparison, actually.
Like, if they were to say they were making a Devil Dinosaur movie, I'd be like, that's neat. What a deep cut.
Well, they are.
But if then they were to say they changed their mind, I'd be like, okay.
Well, they are making a Moon Girl Devil Dinosaur cartoon.
Of course they are, because they should.
Lawrence Maybe Fishburne the Masters of the Universe people can make that one.
I don't know. This was a better trailer. It's like, okay, I can sort of see how this might work, but... I definitely am not like hyped for this one. I'm worried, and I'm in a tank for Marvel. We all know this, but this one, I don't know. I'm worried this might be their failure.
Well, you were all like not super thrilled about the Shang-Chi trailers, and it's getting like some of the most glowing reviews.
Why was I not thrilled about the Shang-Chi trailers?
I thought you said during like when we were talking about it, you were like, this kind of looks.
I've always been into the Shang-Chi trailers. You're thinking of Dave.
You're thinking of Dave. perhaps. Yeah, I've always thought that it looked a little boring.
Yeah, no, I've been into the Shang-Chi trailers.
Okay.
It's just this one. It's just Eternals. So we'll see.
I'm going to eat your words.
I hope so. I would love to be wrong.
You're going to be like, I heart Icarus so much.
I don't think that's true.
I think we'll be lucky if you like it better than Iron Man 3.
Speaking of Spider-Man, though, that Spider-Man No Way Home trailer, which a lot of people went with, there's been memes about people waiting for this trailer.
Yeah. Well, this was one of those things where we're kind of getting there, and no trailer, and they were thinking we weren't going to get a trailer.
Because they weren't going to do a trailer.
Well, no, because the trailer spoils a lot.
It does.
So,
but I bet it doesn't spoil even half of this movie.
No, I would imagine not.
It seems to show the premise, the basic premise, and it looks like that premise, like, even no matter how fast the movie moves, it feels like they couldn't arrive at that premise before 20 minutes in, maybe 30. I just can't imagine, these scenes, I guess the question is, when does he go to Doctor Strange?
Mm-hmm.
Does he do that 10 minutes in? 20? 30?
You could potentially
do it pretty quickly.
All the stuff they show of, like, J. Jonah ranting at him.
Could be in the first 15 minutes.
And everybody being interrogated and all that stuff. That could be the first 10 or 15 minutes of the movie, and then he's like, I gotta fix this.
It's true. So let's just quick talk about, like, the bare bones of what you see in it. It looks like it starts right where the previous one left off. He's been outed to the world. He is with MJ, and there's some sweet scenes of them together, and there's kind of some heartfelt talk of, like, you know, she's like, are you happy that maybe you don't have to lie anymore? And he's like, kind of a little defensive, and he's like, I didn't like lying, you know? And I really liked that stuff. That was, this is an example of something that Eternals couldn't pull off, and I know these characters now, but, so it's easier, but I'm like, oh, immediately I'm engaged with his problems.
Right.
She actually has a completely valid point of view, too, but I'm also happy to see them together. They're sweet. It's a good couple. And, but his life is turned upside down, and you see kids at school all taking pictures of him. It's clear that he is like a celebrity and both also kind of infamous.
Well, that's the thing. Not only is his identity revealed, but Mysterio framed him for basically murdering Mysterio and launching the attack on London.
Yeah, you see him getting like grilled by like S.H.I.E.L.D. or FBI or cops or whatever. Yeah. And at some point, he goes to Doctor Strange and he's like, can you use magic to undo people knowing it?
And Wong, the fun killer, is like, don't do this. And Stephen Strange is like, no, we got it.
Yes.
I am... Doctor Strange is low on my Marvel cinematics. I actually think Doctor Strange is one of their more boring movies. But when Doctor Strange is in other people's movies, he's great. Like, Benedict Cumberbatch turned out to be great casting.
He shows up and he's this smart-ass jackass.
Yeah.
Like, who's super powerful.
Him and Thor Ragnarok is great. Him in the Avengers movies was great.
Like, in Endgame and all that stuff.
But it feels a little weird for Doctor Strange to be like, oh, we'll just change the world, it's fine.
Yeah, he was a little more serious about his duties, yeah.
Well, and like Thor, I mean, he was trying to stop Loki, because, you know, Loki's Loki. And then Endgame and all that, he's very serious. He is kind of like
I think they do a little of what the comics do, which is to say when a new writer comes on or a new vibe is around, they kind of will go to it. Right now, I think Taika Waititi and, still some fallout from the Guardians stuff has brought back a little bit of infectious fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is a little bit more impish.
I will say.
And a little bit more back to his old arrogance, actually.
And also, he is the guy who thought he could fix everything, you know, as a surgeon.
I will say, does look like Peter Parker screws up the spell anyways.
Well, so. The other thing is, like, this kid lost 5 years of his life. I was beside him when he tried to save the world. Like, you can see, and he may be like, you know what? I wouldn't do this for anybody else, but I'll do this for this kid.
Right. I get it. It just felt a little odd.
I get that. And then, Peter screws it up by being his neurotic, fast talky self. Dave, I remember early on, you did not like speed talking Peter Parker. Like, you definitely were like, this is not my Peter Parker. Have you come around on this, or just like.
I have. I guess I'm going to say I have in a way. It's still not quite my Spider-Man, but I think Tom Holland is charismatic and does a good job with it, and I enjoy watching him on screen. So, yes, I guess I'd say I've come around.
Yeah.
It's still like if I could go back and change things, I would change it so Spider-Man isn't an Iron Man protege.
Yeah, I think everybody would.
But I have no qualms with, like, I think they did really quite good at executing what their vision was.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have a problem with Iron Man, the Iron Man protege thing, but I understand why so many people do.
It is kind of a little weird, you know. I understand superheroes are just bigger than life stuff. They take our normal everyday problems and they imagine them in these very large ways. But sometimes people are very unforgiving. So if Peter Parker accidentally creates this world-threatening multiverse because he was just a little stammery, spazzy kid, people are going to remember that the same way they remember that
Star-Lord
inadvertently let Thanos get loose and snap away half the universe.
Except everybody loves Tom Holland, so they'll forgive him for it.
Probably so. Although they like to pick sides.
There will be BuzzFeed hot take quizzes about how Peter ruined the universe more.
Yes, but obviously it paves the way for the multiverse stuff.
Yep. Well, he doesn't. I mean, that was done in Loki. That was the breaking of the multiverse.
I have to wonder if there will be some reveals about, like, oh, this should have worked, but something was jolting the time stream, and what he doesn't know is yet, because, off in Loki Town, Loki was causing this mischief, and then, like, it screwed up his spell.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised how much Doctor Strange there was in this. Like, I knew he was going to be in it, but there's, like, straight up out of the Doctor Strange.
This is
like
Spider-Man Doctor Strange.
The curving of the world and all that stuff, the special effects, like, it looks like Doctor Strange, which is kind of cool.
And it all leads up to a finale where things go kerblooey, and there are glimpses of some Spider-Man villains from the Raimi movies.
Mm-hmm. And others.
Nick tells me there's like 80 different villains in this, but the only ones I spotted were a pumpkin bomb from Green Goblin.
Pumpkin bomb.
And straight up Dr. Octopus.
Willem
Dafoe's voice.
Is that Willem Dafoe's voice? Yeah, are we sure of that?
Well, that's still Green Goblin.
Of course, Otto from Alfred Molina.
Is what you're about to say like one of these, like, such a deep cut that maybe I shouldn't know it?
No. I mean, there were three other villains that are in there.
I didn't see any of them watched through the trailer. Right. I saw one. And I think it's
like Vulture flying around in the background or something?
There's a lightning bolt.
Oh, okay.
And we know that Jamie Foxx is in it.
Right. I guess that's true.
There's also a silhouette, and there's also one other thing.
See, a silhouette, that's like freeze framey stuff. I don't want to know that stuff.
I mean, I saw it.
I did not catch it.
You saw it after you knew?
No, I saw it while I was watching it.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to this. Dave, like you, I kind of don't want to know anymore, but I also know that all my friends are blabby, and I might as well watch the trailers, because I'd rather see it in context than have someone describe it to me.
Right. I will probably skip subsequent trailers, if there are subsequent trailers. When is this coming out?
It's coming out in December.
So there'll be another one.
Okay, there'll be another one, yeah. I'll probably skip it, and what I've decided I'm going to do is I'm going to say about three or so friends that I know post memes and stuff, and that is kind of the world we live in, and I'm just going to snooze them for a month when it hits. Just going to do it. No offense to them. They can have their fun. I'm just going to hide them.
I bet the Eternals will have a new trailer with it, because that'd be, what, November?
Maybe.
Yeah, I bet they'll put a new Spider-Man trailer on Eternals.
So I can see that.
A couple months before we go.
So you might have an actual reason to go see it.
I'm gonna pay $30 on Disney Plus, because they'll do that for Eternals.
I'm catty.
All right, that's it for the news and all the time we have to bash on Eternals. I'm sure we might work a couple more jabs into our comics discussion.
I think so.
But we'll be back in a second to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics week of Wednesday, August 25th. It is the last week of August, the final summer comics release.
Yep. Who knows? When next we talk, temperatures might be dropping.
It could have plummeted all the way to 92.
That's probably about right.
Well, today it's like, what, 115? So
hold your horses, pumpkin sluts.
Listen, I love that meme. but Nick, I was looking at the weather for next week, and it was like there were highs in the low 90s, like 90 or 91. And I'm like,
that's practically frigid by Texas terms.
I'm just saying, like, hey, you know, hurricanes and stuff come through, and there's scary and dangerous, but sometimes it will cool us off, and it's the start of it.
Next week there's highs in the 88s and 89s.
See what I'm saying? 88? What? What's next? 70? Oh, yeah.
There's a
what's next? The snowpocalypse and no power?
No.
Oh, crap.
Well, we are supposed to have a more bitter winter than we did last year, which is really scary. Right. That's what I've heard.
Huh. Oh, good.
So, yeah.
You pumpkin sluts are going to kill us all.
Can that be the title of the
episode? It might be. It might be. Anyway, I thought this was a solid week of comics.
Yeah, it's a good kind of... It's a sort of varied week. But with some... For me... DC is kind of continuing to be a really fun hangout.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about them first?
Let's talk first issues and stuff. Okay. And then we'll get to the thing I think we all really enjoy, which is another DC, like number two.
Yep.
Spider-Man Life Story Annual. I feel like this is a little bit late. This is Chip Zdarsky and Mark Bagley doing a sort of a side story to their Spider-Man Throughout the Ages story that we all loved.
Yeah, and I think we can say it is about J. Jonah Jameson
taking
on dealing with a story that was a true classic Spider-Man story where he was helped fund the creation of the Scorpion to take down Spider-Man,
and
later
the
Spider-Slayer. And it is about, in this, he goes to jail for
about,
it.
About four pages in, it's 1967, and he's in jail, and then the rest of the story is him in jail for like 15 years.
Yeah, and he... there is a question of whether, because this is very much kind of like, it's a kind of more realistic take, but it's classic Jonah. Sometimes Jonah, like really as far back as like the 1980s, they would do stories that would kind of redeem him, show he really loved his wife, that he would try and do right by the paper, and like even sometimes sublimate his hatred for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
This is him without, where it's a mania. He cannot let it go. Even in prison, where he's like there with inmates like
Norman
Osborn, and you see like his therapy sessions and his attempts to get out of it, and there's some other neat guest stars. Everything from like you see Captain Stacy from Spider-Man lore, and several other characters. There's a surprise character that I didn't know was who they were until the very end. I'm not saying it's a secret surprise.
Also, a look at his relationship with his son.
Yeah, like he's always like this is again true to the old comics. It's just kind of done in a more serious way. His son John Jameson, the astronaut, aka Man Wolf, is like the one thing he was always proud of. He was like really loved his son and thought that he should like be the hero and not some masked outlaw like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
More of a Man-Wolf. Yeah. That's a
Was
that's
the thing
a hero.
With his wife, is that canon or was that made up for this specifically?
I think that was made up for this, but I'm not sure.
It kind of fuels his hatred in a way that I could understand.
Yeah, I actually don't know on that. I don't know if that was something that at some point got retconned in there, but they provide, at least in his mind, some justification for why he hates Spider-Man, and specifically masked outlaws and stuff like that. Anyway, it's a very personal, focused story. It's like one guy's life over a span of a number of, like, a decade or two in prison. You know, part of me also just liked it because I'm like, honestly, Jameson, as depicted in the comics, has been sometimes such a shit he deserved to go to jail. He endangered others and with his crazy vendetta. He's not unsympathetic at times.
I think if you loved Spider-Man Life Story, I think you have to read this.
It's a must read.
And if you didn't love Spider-Man Life Story, you read it wrong. Go back and read it again.
Yeah, get it right.
And if it was in print, if you hadn't read it, I would say buy it, but it's not in print at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, hold your horses.
They are going to do a hardcover that includes this Life Story annual in it.
We'll get there.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Is this Bagley back on art?
It is.
Yeah, it is.
It's really good Bagley.
It's the exact creative team.
Yep.
That's cool to know that there's a hardcover coming
of
all of
this. This is, I think, that may be why they put the trade out of print.
Yeah.
They may be like, well, that doesn't have the whole story anymore, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't buy the trade.
Me too. What about all those suckers we talked to buy in the trade?
Well, honestly, I would enjoy if they were to start building up material to do a second collection at some point.
Yeah, I'd be all about
but
that.
But, like, you know, this is going to be a story that focuses on the clone Spider-Man, or here's a story from MJ's perspective or whatever, and to compile all of those.
Yeah.
Would love it. I feel like he's got a setting I really like, and I like seeing them, the decades pass as in their lives and stuff.
There is also a Winter Guard miniseries. Apparently, in Avengers right now, the Winter Guard and the Avengers have been going at it. Winter Guard, if you don't know, is the Russian super team. They have modified a little bit. It used to be the Soviet super soldiers. They've added some of the characters from the other Soviet team. And basically, this is a story of Yelena Belova and Alexei, a.k.a. the Red Guardian, who mysteriously looks like David Harbour now.
Yeah, you know.
they are at odds with the Winter Guard, who are at odds with the Avengers, and the Winter Guard is made up of a variety of other Soviet superheroes.
Yeah, it's an interesting gaggle of people.
Yeah, so basically it's two renegade Russian superheroes against the official Russian superhero team. There's clearly some other agenda going on.
Yeah, some good action.
Yeah. I liked it, and I think it's a good. You don't have to know any of the Winter Guard to read this.
No,
but if you like, I think especially people who had some fun with the portrayal in Black Widow,
would enjoy Guardian, it here because
this is their kind of link up to that.
We got Transformers Shattered Glass, which is the Mirror Universe. Autobots are bad guys. Decepticons are good guys.
Nick, you read this and enjoyed it?
Yeah, I did, because it focuses on the evil Autobot Blur, who has become sort of a master bounty hunter in this universe.
He's mainly known as like a motor mouth.
He was
back in the day.
He was. He was. He first appeared in the Transformers animated movie.
Yep.
Fun character. This is a little more sinister.
I saw he does occasionally do the motor mouth thing, although I wasn't sure why he does sometimes and not other times.
Because the times he's not, he's actively choosing to go slow.
He's like, okay, he's reining it in.
Yeah. And I like the concept of Shattered Glass. It's not unlike Star Trek Mirror Universe.
Everybody loves a good evil universe story.
It's true. I don't know why it's so good, but it is.
And I like that there's some cool world building in here that I really appreciated. So I'm all in for this one.
They're doing a lot of Transformers stuff lately. They've got the King Grimlock.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their
main... That was a one-shot, right?
Oh, was this a one-shot? Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, I'm not sure. I thought it was a miniseries.
I might be wrong about that. I think somebody did.
You can make a... No, Grimlock can do a miniseries.
Yeah. But anyway, a lot of Transformers stuff and Mirror Universe stuff. Always good. Image has a new book called Echolands, which is from the creators of the Batwoman comic.
Yep.
J.H. Williams and W. Hayden Blackman.
Anybody who also read J.H. Williams or saw J.H. Williams' art on Promethea... We'll be kind of familiar with his experimental style. I mean, it's
photoreal. It's gorgeous.
It is.
This is a beautiful comic. It's also in that sideways format. It's sidebound, so it's like you get the long ways comic.
Yeah, yep. Kind of like, in some ways, reminiscent of 300 back when.
Yeah.
And it's a fusion of different eras. Like, there's fantasy, sci-fi elements, western. Nick, I know that you read this and also like this one pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, the art is always stunning. Williams is just one of those guys that I've always gravitated towards just because he can kind of vary his styles quite a bit. But I liked the sort of all-encompassing world with the sort of magic at its backbone and this character that has some sort of... I mean, it feels very heavy metal-ish. Character who has an ungodly power that a regime wants to use for X purpose, who knows. But I thought
that does sound like heavy metal stuff.
Yeah, it does.
But like, it's fascinating, super lush visuals, a story where you're kind of like, that's crazy, but sure, okay.
But it's executed well, and I love the format of this. It's just kind of fun. I mean, people are going to, like, how do I back and board this? I'm like, well, you know.
You can back and board.
It goes flippy, flippy.
Yeah, it fits right.
Does it fit?
Yeah.
It's regular comic size. Here's a quick question. It's on the heavy metal front. Any boobs in there?
No boobs.
No boobs.
Or swearing, I don't
think.
Well,
I don't know if that's heavy metal material, then.
There is lots of violence and heads explode.
All right, I'll allow it.
But no, I really enjoyed it.
I prefer it if a topless barbarian woman could walk by at some point, just to give it the full...
Just wait for issue two, I'm sure.
There is a new issue of Marvel Voices, which is their focus on short stories. This one is the Asian American Pacific Islander. It has a Shang-Chi side story, a Jimmy Woo story,
Jubilee,
Miss Marvel, Jubilee, some of their other characters from the, I forget which. There's Bishop.
Did you say Miss Marvel?
I did say Miss Marvel.
Okay, yeah.
And then looks like maybe Silhouette from the New Warriors.
Silk.
Yeah, Silk's in here.
I think there's... I saw like. I don't know if that was
Amadeus Cho.
Amadeus Cho Hulk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bunch of cool short stories, definitely worth a look. A lot of good creators in there, Greg Pak, Jin Lin Wang, I forget who all else is in here. Some work by Will J. Potasio.
Oh, wow.
I don't see a lot of.
Yeah, yeah.
Dark Hawk, there's a new Dark Hawk series, which maybe is most notable for being a... the lead is a high school basketball player who develops MS, and then becomes a superhero. And it's got really nice art. It is by Kyle Higgins, who has been doing a sort of, like, alternate superhero thing in Radiant Black. Yeah. So if you're digging Radiant Black, you might want to give this one a look. Image or Top Cow has a book called Saint Mercy, which appears to be a Western by way of the Incan Empire.
Yeah, I think it spans a few hundred years and begins with like sort of fall of Incan Empire, but has I think two characters, one character from Incas, you know, like their peak era or near the fall, tying into something in the West. But I don't know how it all works, if there's magic stuff going on or what.
It's very pretty. The writer has worked on things like Jurassic World, Ghostbusters, Fast and Furious, and Riddick. I'm not sure. It's like basically it sounds like he's a staff writer kind of deal.
Yeah.
Over to DC. Let's talk about Superman 78, which is the companion piece to Batman 89, basically. Yep.
The Christopher Reeve, Richard Donner Superman continued.
This is going to bring in Brainiac, who has never been in any of the Superman movies that I know of, which is weird.
Yep.
It's got beautiful art by Wilfredo Torres.
And I think that, like Batman 89, we don't know if they necessarily got the voice quite right for feeling like the movies. But the like individual bits and pieces, the way Clark talks, the way Perry White talks, it's pretty good.
And it's a solid superhero story. It's a solid Superman story.
I like that there's kind of a neat thing where they use the robotic Brainiac.
Yeah.
And it shows up, and it's like kind of talking in kind of creepy Terminator-like analysis beginning and all this stuff while it's fighting Superman. But the classic green-skinned Brainiac is running the show from orbit or elsewhere.
I thought that was a good way to do that, to bring in the probe Brainiac, because that was the late 70s, early 80s Brainiac.
Something like that, yeah. I think George Perez created that design.
Which is pretty cool. I thought that was a good way to use them, too.
I think that the same people who probably enjoyed Batman 89 are that you are going to enjoy this.
Yeah. On the other end of the spectrum, we've got Superman vs. Lobo, a black label book by the writers of Money Shot, which, if you don't know, we've talked about before, is about scientists having sex with aliens for money.
Yes. Yep. They can't get scientific funding in the future because it is the future of the world we live in, and that's just how it's going to happen, so they have to make porn.
Art is by cheesecakey artist Mark Andolfo, but despite all those creative teams, this is not a cheesecakey book. It is a alien archaeologist or anthropologist basically is like doing a research on last survivors of civilizations, which happens to include both Superman and Lobo.
And let's see, Nick. You told me a little bit more about the premise.
Yeah,
but it sounds like fun.
It does.
I don't know that it needed to be black label.
No,
because they kind of actually, it's not like filled with foul language. There's no nudity. Batman's Wang makes no appearance that I know of. Is this just a one off?
It's a 3-issue miniseries. Yep.
3-issue miniseries. But I think you probably correctly surmised, Randy, that they may be using black label for sort of Elseworlds type stories and anything that's not quite something they want to call continuity.
Yeah, I think they want to leave this out of continuity, basically.
But if you've been hankering for some Lobo, there you go.
The book I think we were all super excited about this week, including Anna, like all four of us love this. Superman, Son of Kal-El.
Yep.
Tom Taylor.
More Tom Taylor.
Continues to be an amazing book that everyone should read.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say too much about it, but basically... No. Well, there's a great discussion between Cal and his son.
I think I can just briefly say that the kind of neat thing is that Superman, like his son's Jonathan says, like, how come you don't change the world more? Why don't you? Mm-hmm. Or why aren't you more of proactive in changing the world? And Clark, there's some interesting reasons why, but he does sort of explain himself. And you definitely get the sense that Jonathan may go a different route, and his dad is encouraging of it. But the exact whys of it is really interesting, and there's also stuff about his secret identity, his new secret identity, as well as new threats arising, stuff that are going to have some moral decisions to make, which I think Tom Taylor's having a lot of fun with. Having this young man like have to kind of make some difficult decisions, as well as live in the shadow of his father. It's just that his dad is a good guy, and so he doesn't make him feel it, right?
Right.
You know, he's not. He's never going to make him feel he has to live up.
Right.
It's super good. Really like that. The art's great too.
Also, another great issue of Robin this week, where basically Robin is they're having a they give it a full on splash page rooftop race.
Yes.
Where Damian is trying to outrun Tim, Dick.
Jason
and Stephanie.
It's funny that we're calling them all by their main names instead of Spoiler, Nightwing, Tim, Drake, Robin, and all that.
Robins.
But yeah, they found out that he's participating in this basically Lazarus Pit Mortal Kombat thing, and they're like, don't do that. And he goes on the run, and they're like, get him. And there's what happens out of that is that you have these really interesting character moments as various people kind of like meet up with him, face off in like little kind of not full on fights, but skirmishes with him, trying to get him to stop. And they try and talk him down, and what happens is pretty interesting. It's
Damon gets a few jabs.
Oh my god!
And people
zinger on Nightwing is one for the ages.
But there's also a lot of heart in the conversation for sure. Well, and I feel like it harkens back to sort of Morrison's run.
Yeah, if it had just been snark or just been heartfelt without any laughter or whatever, I think it would have been weaker.
Yeah.
But the combination is really good.
Joshua Williamson is hitting a lot of highs in this one.
This is an ongoing series, right? It's not just a mini series about the contest.
Correct. Cool. I think it just starts there.
So that's that's pretty promising for where he might go afterwards.
Yeah, I was very pleased with this. It feels like a nice companion piece to Tom Taylor's Nightwing.
It does.
It does.
Any other DC books to mention?
I don't think I had any.
No, okay. I don't think so.
One last Marvel. I want to mention Donny Cates' Thor has another issue.
Yep.
He's having visions of a bad future. He goes to see Jane Foster. The Wrecking Crew is in it. There's some fun stuff. Chew, the side story to Chew that John Layman's been doing has an issue. Second part of the new story arc. There's another issue of Department of Truth, which they are closing in on pretty big revelations, I think. Maybe, I think the next issue, this is 12. I think 13 or 14 may have some pretty big notable things.
Cool.
There is a graphic novel, Choose Your Own Adventure, 8th Grade Witch, which I know Dave and I both gave a look to. It's literally fun. A Choose Your Own Adventure graphic novel.
What's interesting is that it is drawn as if, like, you are the viewer the whole time, so every panel is a first-person perspective with, like, your hands and stuff in front of you.
Yep.
But
at the bottom of someone's like, do you do this? Go to this page. So you can jump around just like a, and you can look for all the death and go back.
I was going to say, I think Randy said, how fast can I die?
I did want to see how many decisions I could make, how fast I could die. I died pretty quickly.
They're fun decisions. Even the first one is like an exciting, a neat one to choose. I think it's pretty well done, and I suspect this is going to kind of do pretty good. Hopefully introduce a new generation to the weird fun of Choose Your Own Adventures.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Randy, before we finish or go through trades and stuff, I think we might have left out one of the notable releases of the week.
Oh, we did.
I think it's because none of us are personally enthused for it, but we definitely have to...
Everyone in the world is
interested in King Spawn. This is the companion book to Spawn, the first of these Spawniverse things coming out, which are going to be followed by, what, Gunslinger Spawn, and...
They announce in this one, another one as well.
Oh, do they?
The Burninator.
The Scourge.
It is the Burninator. what I read and that I didn't quite know is that this is... King Spawn is not, in fact, like a medieval Spawn or, like, a sword-wielding Spawn from the... Or, like, a future Spawn where he's, like, taken over.
Or a giant-sized ape Spawn.
Or a giant-sized ape Spawn. But, in fact, it is a companion book as Detective Comics is to Batman of the regular Spawn.
They should have called it Chain Comics starring Spawn.
All chains, all the time.
I'm just waiting for the comic that just focuses on his cape.
More chain action as you like it.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are the target audience here. But that said, I hope the Spawn fans enjoy it.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, Spawn is getting a resurgence that he has not had in quite some time.
That's true.
And I know that even Anna, who is more skeptical of Spawn even than we are, sometimes like Gunslinger Spawn.
She can't help but be drawn to the coolness.
She can't be drawn to Gunslinger Spawn.
Yep.
Then you show her Violator.
Uh-oh. There is a new graphic novel from Kyle Starks called Old Head. I'm just going to read the back. The madcap action horror story of the world's toughest former pro basketball player returning home with his daughter to learn about his destiny and his mother's mysterious past while, right next door, Dracula and his goons are on the eve of their bloodiest holiday.
That sounds... It
is classified as horror/sports/humor. Punderworld is a new book from Linda Sejic, Stephen Sejic's wife. She has done previously like Death Vigil and some other things. This is basically a tale of Persephone and Hades, their sort of romance, but with a sort of like a new hipster anxiety filter onto it.
I do want to read that. The Sedgwick's put out books I like.
Yeah, it's very pretty. And
I was going to say, it looks gorgeous.
It looks like fun.
Is it not Persephone and Hades also in Lore Olympus, or is that like a bunch of other characters?
I believe that's also, Lore Olympus.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they are a little bit of the couple du jour of mythology
The internet's power couple.
Yep.
Finally, there is the Star Wars High Republic trade, first one of the Marvel series that comes out, collects the first five issues And that has been pretty successful. So if you've been waiting on trade, there's a trade. Did I miss anything?
Just an issue of Wolverine for me.
All right. That is it for this week. I don't believe we have any topics to tackle.
It's crazy.
We're watching What If. We're watching Ted Lasso.
When y'all will go watch Green Knight, maybe I can talk about it.
Maybe. But until... Oh, well, I guess you should say, before we get to our sign-off, if you have not listened, Dave and I do have a side project with Anna called The Other Half, a G.I. Joe podcast.
We're having a ball with it.
Yeah, we're having a blast. We recorded episodes 10 and 11 last night. Each episode
is one issue.
An issue of Larry Hama's G.I. Joe. There are three episodes out so far covering issues 1 through 3.
The things that we get to talking about, I think, will surprise people. I was talking about this last night to some friends and just saying, like, we ended up discussing Doc from the show as a representative of pacifism in there. We talked about Destro's butt.
We did.
I'm trying to think what all else went
on
there.
How does it compare to Nightwing's butt?
Nightwing is hard to beat.
The weirdly detailed brainwave, how the brainwave scanner works, which actually has some like Michael Crichton-ish kind of thought behind it.
Yep.
At any given issue by Hama ends up having like all these interesting side avenues that maybe if you read it back when you've forgotten about, or you don't know that it actually had this kind of depth like the fact that Cobra... started out that its origin, as revealed in this, is sort of like a skeevy, faux patriotic, multi-level marketing scheme.
Yep.
That is really, literally, the origin of the terrorist organization Cobra. Is right from within Middle America.
Yep.
There's a lot of good stuff in those issues, and it's super fun to talk about, as well as we talk about like the cool and goofy stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, give that a listen if you're looking for more podcasts. You can find it on the various. We're on Spotify.
And it's just
Apple
called
Plus.
It's just called The Other Half, not G.I. Joe.
It's called
Half.
The Other Half, a G.I. Joe podcast.
A G.I. Joe podcast, right?
Because there are several other things called The Other Half. We found out, so. But yeah, and until next time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.